good enough to drink, and she still held the black box Bianca had given her beneath one slender arm. "Godmother," I startled.
"Well, fool, what are you waiting for? I took the trouble to show you the way to escape. Do it."
"You saved us," I coughed. She sighed and rolled her eyes. "Though it pains me in ways I could not explain. Yes, child. How am I supposed to have you if I let this Red Court hussy kill you? Stars above, wizard. I thought you had better sense than this."
"You saved me so you could get me."
"Not like this," Leah said, holding a silken cloth to her nose delicately. "You're a husk, and I want the whole fruit. Go rest, child. We will speak again soon enough." And then she withdrew and was gone. Michael got me out of the house. I remember the smell of his old truck, sawdust and sweat and leather, and I felt its warm seat creak beneath me.
"Susan," I said, "where's Susan?"
"I'll try." And I drifted into darkness for a while, dimly conscious of a lingering pain in my chest, of Lydia's warm skin pressed against my hand. I tried to move, to make sure the girl was all right, but it was too much effort. The truck door opened and slammed again. Then came the rumble of its engine, and then everything went mercifully black.
Chapter 31. The darkness swallowed me and kept me for a long time. There was nothing but silence where I drifted, nothing but endless night. I wasn't cold. I wasn't warm. I wasn't anything. No thought, no dreams, no anything. It was too good to last. The pain of the burns came to me first. Burns are the worst injuries in the world. I've been scorched on my right arm and shoulder, and it throbbed with a dull persistence that dragged me out of the peace. All of the other assorted scrapes and bruises and cuts came back to me. I felt like a collection of complaints and malfunctions. I ached everywhere. Memory came through a haze next. I started remembering what had happened. The nightmare, the vampire bowl, the kids who had been seduced into being there, and the fire. Oh, my God. What had I done? I thought of the fire, towering up in walls of solid flame, reaching out with hungry arms to drag the vampire screaming back into the pyre I had made of the hedges and the trees. Stars and stones. Those children had been helpless in that. In the fire and the smoke that I'd needed a major sorceress's assistance to escape. I had never stopped to think about that. I had never even considered the consequences of unleashing my power that way. I opened my eyes. I lay in a bed in my room. I stumbled out of the bed and into my bathroom. Someone must have fed me soup at some point, because when I started throwing up, there was something left to come out. Killed them. I killed those kids. My magic. The magic that was the energy of creation and life itself had reached out and burned them to death. I threw up until my belly ached with the violence of it. Wild grief running rampant over me. I struggled, but I couldn't force the images out of my head. Children burning. Justine burning. Magic defines a man. It comes from down deep inside you. You can't accomplish anything with magic that isn't in you somewhere to do. And I had burned those children alive. My power, my choice, my fault. I sobbed. I didn't come to myself until Michael came into the bathroom. By the time he did, I lay on my side, curled up tight, the water of the shower pouring down over me, the cold making me shiver. Everything hurt, inside and out. My face ached from being twisted up so tightly. My throat had closed almost completely as I wept. Michael picked me up as though I weighed no more than one of his children. He dried me with a towel and shoved me into my heavy robe. He had on clean clothes, a bandage on his wrist and another on his forehead. His eyes looked a little more sunken, as though short on sleep. But his hands were steady, his expression calm, confident.
I gathered myself again, very slowly. By the time he was finished, I lifted my eyes to his.
How many? I asked. How many of them died?
He understood. I saw the pain in his eyes. After I got the pair of you out, I called the fire department and let them know that people needed a rescue. They got there pretty quickly, but...
How many, Michael?
He drew in a slow breath. 11 bodies.
Susan?
My voice shook. He hesitated. We don't know. 11 was all they found. They're checking dental records. They said the heat was so intense that the bones hardly looked human. I let out a bitter laugh. Hardly human. There were more kids than that there.
I know,
but that's all they found. And they rescued a dozen more alive.
It's something, at least. What about the ones unaccounted for?
They were gone, missing. They're presumed dead. I closed my eyes. Fire had to burn hot to reduce bones to ash. Had my spell been that powerful? Had it hidden most of the dead? I can't believe it, I said. I can't believe I was so stupid.
Harry, Michael said. He put his hand on my shoulder. We've no way to know. We just don't. They could have been dead before the fires came. The vampires were feeding on them indiscriminately where we couldn't see.
I know, I said. I know. God, I was so arrogant. Such an idiot to go walking in there like that.
Harry.
And those poor, stupid kids paid the price. Damn it, Michael.
A lot of the vampires didn't make it out either, Harry.
It isn't worth it if it wiped out all the vamps in Chicago.
Michael fell quiet. We sat that way for a long time. Finally, I asked him,
how long have I been out?
More than a day. You slept through last night and yesterday and most of tonight. The sun will rise soon.
God, I said.
I rubbed at my face. I could hear Michael's frown.
I thought we'd lost you for a while. We couldn't wake you up. I was afraid to take you to the hospital. Any place where there'd be a record of you, the vampires could trace it.
We need to call Murphy and tell her.
Murphy's still sleeping, Harry. I called Sergeant Stallings last night when I called the fire department. SI tried to take over the investigation, but someone up the line called the police department off it altogether. Bianca has contacts in City Hall, I guess.
They can't stop the missing persons investigations that are going to start cropping up as soon as people start missing those kids. But they can stick a bunch of things in the way of it.
Crap!
I know, Michael said. I tried to find Susan, the girl Justine, and the sword after. Nothing.
We almost pulled it off. Sword and captives and all.
I know. I shook my head.
How's Charity? The baby?
He looked down. The baby. We still don't know about him. They can't find out what's wrong. They don't have any idea why he's getting weaker.
I'm sorry. Is Charity...
She's stuck in bed for a while, but she'll be fine. I called her yesterday.
Called? You didn't go see her?
I guarded you, Michael said. Father Forthill was with my family, and there are others who can watch them when I'm away. I winced.
She didn't like that, did she? That you stayed with me.
She's not speaking to me.
I'm sorry.
He nodded. So am I.
Help me up. I'm thirsty.
He did, and I only swayed a little as I stood. I tottered out into the living area of my apartment.
What about Lydia?
I asked. Michael remained silent, and my eyes answered my own questions a few seconds later. Lydia lay on the couch in my living room, under a ton and a half of blankets, curled up, her eyes closed and her mouth a little open. I recognize her, Michael said. I frowned.
From where?
Kravos's lair. She was one of the kids they hauled away early on. I whistled.
She must have known him.
Known what he's going to do, somehow. Try not to wake her up, Michael said, his voice soft. She wouldn't sleep. I think they drugged her. She was panicky, gabbling. I just got her quieted down a half an hour ago. I frowned a little and went into the tiny kitchen. Michael followed. I got a Coke out of the icebox, thought better of it with my stomach the way it was, and fetched a glass of water instead. I drank unsteadily. I've got hell to pay now, Michael. He frowned at me. What do you mean? What you do comes back to you, Michael. You know that much. Roll a stone and it rolls back upon you. Sow the wind and reap the whirlwind. Michael lifted his eyebrows. I didn't realize you read much of the Bible. Proverbs always made a lot of sense to me, I said. But with magic, things like that come a lot sharper and cleaner than with other things. I killed people. I burned them. It's gonna come back to haunt me. Michael frowned and looked out at Lydia. The law of three, eh? I shrugged. I thought you told me once that you didn't believe in that. I drank some more water. I didn't. I don't. It's too much like justice to believe that what you do with magic comes back to you threefold. You've changed your mind? I don't know. All I know is that there's going to be justice, Michael. For those kids, for Susan, for what's happened to Charity, and your son. If no one else is going to arrange it, I'll damn well do it myself. I grimaced. I just hope that if I'm wrong, I can dodge karmic paybacks long enough to finish this. Harry, the ball was the whole point. It was Bianca's chance to put you down while staying within the terms of the Accords. She laid her trap and missed. Do you think she's going to keep pushing it? I gave him a look. Of course, and so do you. Or you wouldn't have played watchdog over here for the past day. Good point. I raked my fingers through my hair and reached for the Coke. My stomach be damned. We'll just have to decide what our next move is going to be. Michael shook his head. I don't know. I need to be with Charity and my son. If he's sick, he needs me near him. I opened my mouth to object, but I couldn't. Michael had already risked his neck for me more than once. All right, I said. I thank you for your help. He nodded and looked down as though ashamed. Harry, I'm sorry. I've done all that I could, but I'm not as young as I used to be, and I lost the sword. Maybe I'm not the one to hold it after all. Maybe this is how he is telling me that I need to be home right now. I'll be there for my wife and my children. I know, I said. It's all right. Do what you think is best. He touched the bandage on his forehead lightly. If I had the sword, maybe I'd feel differently. He fell quiet. Go on, I said. Look, I'll be all right here. The council will probably give me some help. If they didn't hear about people who died in the fire, that is. If they heard about that I'd broken the first law of magic, they'd take my head off my neck faster than you could say capital offense. Just go, Michael. I'll take care of Lydia. All right, he said. A thought occurred to me, and I didn't hear what Michael said next. Harry? He asked. Harry, are you all right? I'm having a thought, I said. Something feels off about this to me. Doesn't it to you? He just blinked at me. I shook my head. I'll think about it. Make some notes. I'll try to sort this mess out. I started toward the door. Come on, I'll let you out. Michael followed me to the door, and I had my hand on the knob when the door abruptly rattled under several sharp blows that could only loosely be construed as knocking. I shot him a glance over my shoulder, and without a word, he retreated to the fireplace and picked up a poker that had been lying against some of the logs. The tip glowed orange-red. When a fresh barrage hammered against my door, I jerked it open, slipping to one side. A slender figure of medium height stumbled into the room. He wore a leather jacket, jeans, tennis shoes, and a Cubs ball cap. He carried a rifle case made of black plastic, and he smelled of sweat and feminine perfume. You! I snarled. I grabbed the man's shoulder before he could get his balance and spun his shoulders hard, sending him back against the wall. I drove my fist hard at his mouth, felt the bright smack thud of impact on my knuckles. I grabbed the front of his jacket in both hands and with a snarl hurled him away from the wall to the floor of my living room. Michael stepped forward, put his work boot on the back of the intruder's neck, and pressed the glowing tip of the poker close to his eyes. Thomas released the rifle case and jerked his hands up, pale fingers spread.
Jesus,
he gasped. His full lower lip had split and was smeared with something pale and pinkish, not much like human blood. I glanced down at my knuckles, and they were smeared with the same substance. It caught the light of the fire and refracted an opalescent sheen.
Dresden,
Thomas stammered. Don't do anything hasty. I reached down and plucked the hat off his head, letting his dark hair spill out and down in an unkempt mane.
Hasty? Like maybe turn traitor on you all of a sudden and let a bunch of monsters eat your girlfriend?
His eyes rolled back to Michael and then over to me.
God, wait. It wasn't like that. You didn't see all that happened afterwards. At least shut the door and listen to me.
I glanced over at the open doorway, and after hesitation, shut it. No sense in leaving my back open just to be contrary.
I don't want to listen to him, Michael.
He's a vampire, Michael said, and he betrayed us. He's probably come here to try to trick us again.
You think we should kill him?
Before he hurts someone else. Michael said. His tone was flat, disinterested. Scary, actually. I shivered a little and drew my robe close around me a little more tightly.
Look, Thomas, I said, I've had a really bad day, and I only woke up a half an hour ago. You're adding to it.
We're all having a bad day, Dresden, Thomas said. Bianca's people were after me all day and night, too. I just barely got here without getting myself torn to pieces.
The night is young, I said. Give me one good reason why I shouldn't kill you like the lying, treacherous vampire sleaze you are.
Because you can trust me, he said. I want to help you.
I snorted.
Why the hell should I believe you?
You shouldn't, he said. Don't. I'm a good liar, one of the best. And I'm not asking you to believe me. Believe the circumstances. We have a common interest.
I scowled. You're kidding me. He shook his head and offered me a wry smile.
I wish I was. I thought I would get the chance to help you out once Bianca had taken her eyes off me, but she double-crossed me.
Well, Thomas, I don't know how new you are to all of this, but Bianca is what we colloquially refer to as a bad guy. They do that. That's one of the ways you can tell they're bad guys.
God save me from idealists, Thomas muttered. Michael growled, and Thomas shot him a hopeful, puppy-like smile.
Look, both of you, they have Dresden's woman.
I took a step forward, my heart fluttering.
She's alive?
For now, Thomas said.
They've got Justine, too. I want her back. You want Susan back. I think we can make a deal. Work together. What do you say?
Michael shook his head.
He's a liar, Harry. I can tell just by being this close to him.
Yes, 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 Thomas said. I confess to it, but at the moment it isn't part of my agenda to lie to anyone. I just want her back.
Justine?
Thomas nodded. So he can keep on draining the life out of her, Michael said. Harry, if we aren't going to kill him, let's at least put him out.
If you do, Thomas said, you'll be making a huge mistake, and I swear to you, by my own stunning good looks and towering ego, that I'm not lying to you.
Okay, I said to Michael. Kill him.
Wait! Thomas shouted. Dresden, please. What do you want me to pay you? What do you want me to do?
I don't have anywhere else to go.
I studied Thomas's expression. He looked weary, desperate, beneath the cool facade he was barely holding on to. And beneath the fear, he looked resigned, determined.
Okay, I said. It's all right, Michael. Let him up.
Michael frowned. Are you sure? I nodded. Michael fell back from Thomas, but he kept the poker gripped loosely in one hand. Thomas sat up, running his fingers lightly over his throat, where Michael's boot had left a dark mark, and then touched his split lip and winced.
Thank you, he said quietly. Look in the case.
I glanced at the black rifle case.
What's in it?
A deposit, he said. A down payment for your help. I quirked an eyebrow and leaned over the case. I ran my fingertips lightly over it. There was no spiny buzz of energy around it to herald the sorceress booby trap, but a good one would be hard to notice. There was something inside, though, something that hummed quietly, a silent vibration of power that ran through the plastic and into my hand, a vibration I recognized. I flicked open the latches on the rifle case, fumbling in my hurry, and swung it open. Amarakis lay gleaming against the gray foam inside the case, unmarked from the inferno at Bianca's townhouse. "Michael," I said quietly. I reached out and touched the blade's hilt again. Still it buzzed with that quiet, deep power, at once reassuring and intimidating. I withdrew my fingers. Michael paced over to the case and leaned down, staring at the sword. His expression wavered and became difficult to read. His eyes filled with tears, and he reached a broad, scarred hand down to the weapon's hilt. He took it in one hand and closed his eyes. "It's all right," he said. "They didn't hurt it." He blinked his eyes open and looked upwards. "I hear you." I glanced up toward my ceiling and said, "I hope you meant that in the figurative sense, because I didn't hear anything." Michael smiled and shook his head. "I was weak for a while. The swords are a burden. Power, yes, but at a price. I thought that perhaps the loss of the sword was his way of telling me it was time to retire." He ran his other hand over the twisted metal nail set into the blade at the weapon's crossguard. "But there's still work to be done." I glanced up at Thomas. "You say they've got Susan and Justine, huh? Where?" He licked his lips. "The townhouse," he said. "The fire ruined the back of the house, but only the exterior. The inside was fine, and the basement was untouched." "All right," I said. "Talk." Thomas did, laying out facts in rapid order. After the havoc of the fire, Bianca and the court had retreated into the mansion. Bianca had ordered the other vampires to each carry one of the helpless mortals out. One of them had brought Susan. When the police and fire crews had arrived, most of the action was over, and the fire marshal had been worked up into a lather over the deaths. He'd gone inside to speak to Bianca and come out calm and collected and ordered everyone to pack up and leave, that he was satisfied that it had been a terrible accident and that everything was over. After that, the vampires had been able to relax and enjoy their guests. "I think they're turning some of them," Thomas said. "Bianca has the authority to allow it now, and they lost too many in the fight and the fire. I know Mavra took a couple and took them with her when she left." "Left?" I asked. Thomas nodded. "She skipped down just after sunset, where it is. A couple of hungry new mouths to feed, you know."
"And how do you know all of this, Thomas? Last I heard, Bianca's people were trying to kill you."
He shrugged. "There's more to a good liar than meets the eye, Dresden. I was able to keep an eye on things for a while."
"Okay," I said. "So they've got our people at the manor house. We just need to get inside, get them, and get out."
Thomas shook his head.
"We need something else. She's brought in mortal security, guards with machine guns. It would be a slaughter."
"That's the spirit," I said with a grim smile.
"Where in the house are they keeping the captives?"
Thomas looked at me rather blankly for a moment. Then he shook his head.
"I don't know." "You've known everything so far," Michael said. "Why are you drying up on us now?"
Thomas gave the knight a wary look.
"I'm serious. I haven't seen any more of that house than you two."
Michael frowned.
"Even if we do get in, we can't go blundering around checking every broom closet. We need to know about the inside of the house."
Thomas shrugged.
"I'm sorry. I'm tapped."
I waved a hand.
"Don't worry. We just need to talk to someone who has seen the inside of the house."
"Capture a prisoner?" Michael asked.
"I don't know how much luck we'd have with that."
I shook my head and glanced over to the sleeping figure of Lydia, who hadn't stirred in all that time.
"We just need to talk to her. She was inside. She might have some useful insights for us in any case. She's got a gift for it."
"Gift?"
"Cassandra's tears. She can see bits of the future." I got dressed and we gave Lydia another hour or so. Thomas went into the bathroom to shower while I sat down in the living room with Michael.
"What I can't figure," I said, "is how we managed to get out of there so easily."
"You call that easy?" Michael said.
I grimaced.
"Maybe.
I would have expected them to come after us by now, or to have sent the nightmare to get us."
Michael frowned, rolling the hilt of his sword between his two hands as though it were a golf club.
I see what you mean. He was quiet for a minute, and then he said, You really think the girl will be of help?
I hope so.
At that moment, Lydia started coughing. I moved to her side and helped her drink some water. She seemed groggy, though she started to stir. Poor kid, I commented to Michael. At least she got a little sleep. I don't think she's had any for days. Michael's words froze me solid. I started to push myself away from Lydia, but her fingers reached out and dug into the sweater I was wearing. I jerked against them, but she held me, easily, not at all moved. The pale girl opened her sunken eyes, and they were flooded with blood, all through the whites, scarlet. She smiled, slow and malicious. She spoke, and her voice came out a low, harsh sound, totally unlike her natural tones, alien and malevolent.
You should have kept her from sleeping, or killed her before she woke.
Michael started to his feet. Lydia rose, and with one arm she lifted me clear of the ground, bloody eyes glaring up at me with wicked exultation.
I've waited long for this.
The alien voice, that of the nightmare, purred. Goodbye, wizard. And the slender girl flung me like a baseball at the stone of my fireplace. Some days, it just doesn't pay to get out of bed. Chapter 32. I flailed my arms and legs and watched the fireplace get closer to breaking open my head. At the last second, I saw a blur of white and pink, and then I slammed into Thomas, driving him into the stones of the fireplace. He let out a grunt, and I bounced off him and back to the floor, momentarily breathless. He'd wrapped a pink bath towel around his hips, but either the sheer speed of his movement or else the impact had knocked it mostly askew. His ribs jutted out on one side, oddly misshapen. Thomas looked up at me, his face twisted into a grimace.
I'll be all right, he said. Look out.
I looked up to find Lydia stalking toward me.
Idiot,
she seethed at Thomas.
What did you think you could accomplish? So be it. You just got added to the list.
Michael slipped in between the possessed girl and me, the sword glittering in the low light of the room. That's far enough, he said. Get back. I struggled back to my feet and wheezed.
Michael, be careful.
Lydia let out another twisted laugh and leaned forward, pressing her sternum against Amaracus's tip.
Oh, yes, Sir Knight. Get back, or what? You'll murder this poor child? I don't think so. I seem to remember that there was something about this sword not being able to draw innocent blood, wasn't there?
Michael blinked and started to glance back at me.
What?
I got to my feet. This is really Lydia. It isn't a magical construct like we saw before. The nightmare is possessing her. Anything we do to Lydia's body, she's going to have to live with later. The girl ran a hand over her breasts beneath the taut lycra, licking her lips and staring at Michael with bloody eyes.
Yes, just a sweet little lamb wandered astray. You wouldn't want to hurt her, would you, Knight?
Harry, Michael said. How do we handle this?
You die, Lydia purred.
She rushed Michael, one hand reaching out to strike the sword's blade aside. When she rushed me, I just got grabbed. But Michael had training, experience. He let the sword fall to the ground and rolled back with Lydia's rush. He grabbed her forearms as she reached for his throat, whirled, and set her tumbling into the couch, knocking it over backwards and sending her into a sprawl on the far side.
Keep her busy, I shouted. I can get it out of her.
Then I rushed back into my bedroom, searching for the ingredients for an exorcism. My room was a mess. I scrambled through it, while out in the living room, Lydia screamed again. There was another thump, this one rattling the wall beside the bedroom door, and the sounds of panting, scuffling.
Hurry up, Harry! Michael gasped. She's strong! I know!
I jerked open the door to my closet and started knocking things off the shelves rather than hunt through them. Behind the spare cans of shaving cream, I located 5-trick birthday candles, the kind that you can't blow out, and a 5-pound bag of salt.
Okay, I called. I'm coming!
Michael and Lydia lay on the floor, his legs wrapped around hers, while his arms pinned hers back behind her in some kind of modified full Nelson hold.
Hold her there, I shouted.
I rushed in a circle around them, shoving back a chair and a footrest, kicking rugs and carpets aside, finally jerking the last one out from beneath Michael. Lydia fought him, twisting like an eel and screaming out at the top of her lungs. I tore open the salt and ran about the pair of them, dumping it out into a white mound in a circle. Then I ran about them, setting the candles down, piling up enough salt around them to keep them from being turned over. Lydia saw what I was doing and screamed again, redoubling her efforts.
"Flicum bicus!"
I shouted, shoving a hurried effort of will into a little spell. The effort made me dizzy for a moment, but the candles burst to light, the circle of candles and salt gathering power. I rose, reaching out my right hand and feeding more energy into the circle, setting it up in a spinning vortex, winding about the three beings inside it, Lydia, Michael, and the nightmare. Energy gathered into the circle, spinning around, whirling magic down into the earth, grounding and dispersing it. I could almost see the nightmare clutching tighter to Lydia, holding on. All I needed was the right move to stun the nightmare, to lock it up for a second, so that the exorcism could sweep it away.
"Azothragal!" I shouted, bellowing out the demon's name. "Azothragal! Azothragal!"
I stretched out my right hand again, concentrating fiercely.
"Be gone!"
Energy rushed out of my body as I completed the spell, swept toward the nightmare within Lydia like a wave lifting a sleeping seal off a rock, and passed over, leaving it untouched. Lydia began to laugh wildly and managed to catch one of Michael's hands in hers. She gave it a twist, and bones snapped with sharp pops and cracks. Michael let out an agonized scream, twisting and jerking. He knocked the circle of salt askew, and Lydia escaped him, rising to face me.
"Such a fool, wizard," she said.
I didn't banter. I didn't even stand there, stunned that my spell had failed so miserably. I wound back a hand and threw a punch at her as hard as I could, hoping to stun the body the demon was riding in to keep it from reacting. The possessed Lydia glided from the path of my punch, caught my wrist, and dumped me onto my back. I started to push myself up, but she threw herself astride me and slammed my head back against the floor twice. I saw stars. Lydia stretched above me, purring and thrusting her hips down against mine. I tried to escape during the moment of gloating, but my arms and legs just didn't respond. She reached down, laying both of her hands almost delicately on my throat, and murmured,
"Such a shame. All this time, and you didn't even know who was after you. You didn't even know who else wanted revenge."
"I guess sometimes you find out the hard way," I slurred.
"Sometimes," Lydia agreed, smiling.
And then her hands closed over my throat, and I didn't have any more air. Sometimes when you're facing death, it feels like everything slows down. Everything stands out sharply in detail, almost freezes. You can see it all, feel it all, as if your brain has decided, in sheer defiance, to seize the last few moments of life and to squeeze them for every bit of living left. My brain did that. But instead of showing me my trashed apartment and how I really needed a new coat of paint on the ceiling, it started frantically shoving puzzle pieces together. Lydia, the shadow demon. Mavra, the torment spells. Bianca. One thing stood out in my mind. A piece that didn't fit anywhere. Susan had been gone for a day or two, where I had been barely able to talk to her. She said she was working on something. That something was happening. It fit somehow, somewhere. Stars swam in my vision and fire started to spread through my lungs. I struggled to pry her arms off me, but it was no use. Possessed, she was simply too strong to deal with. Susan asked me about something. Some insignificant part of the phone conversation we had between sexual innuendos. What had it been? I heard myself make a very slight sound, something like... I tried to lever Lydia's weight up and off me, but she simply rolled with me, taking my weight onto her, and then continuing the motion, slamming me to the floor again. My vision began to darken, though my eyes went wide. It was like staring down a dark tunnel, looking up at Lydia's blood-filled eyes. I saw Michael struggle to his knees, his face white as a fresh dusting of snow. He moved toward Lydia, but she turned her head slightly and kicked him, lashing out with one heel. I heard something else snap as the force of the kick drove Michael back. Murphy had been distracted about something, too. Something she'd hurriedly changed subjects on. Intuition drew a line between them, and then an equal sign. And then I had it. The last piece of the puzzle. I knew what had happened. Where the nightmare had come from. Why it was after me, in particular. I knew how to stop it. Knew what its limits were. How Bianca had enlisted it, and why my spells had been so hard-pressed to affect it. Almost a pity, really. I'd figured things out just in time to die. Vision faded altogether. And a moment later, so did the pain in my throat. Instead of drifting off into whatever lay beyond, though, I sucked in for a breath of air, choking and gasping. My vision became red for a moment as blood rushed back through my head and started to clear. Lydia still crouched over me, up on her knees, straddling me, but she'd released my throat. Instead, she arched her arms up and back over her head to caress Thomas's naked shoulders. The vampire had pressed up against Lydia's back. His mouth nuzzled her throat, slow kisses, strokes of his tongue that made the girl shudder and quiver. His hands roamed slowly over her body, always touching skin, fingers roaming up beneath the brief lycra top to caress her breasts. Lydia gasped, blood-filled eyes distant, unfocused, body responding with a slow, sensual grace. Thomas looked past her, through the dark fall of his hair, to me. His eyes weren't blue-gray anymore. They were empty, white, no color to them at all. I felt cold coming off of him, something I sensed more than felt on my skin, a horrible and seductive cold. He continued spreading a line of kisses up Lydia's neck to her ear, making her whimper and shake. I swallowed and crawled back on my elbows, dragged my hips and legs out from beneath the pair of them. Thomas murmured, so softly I wasn't sure I'd heard him. "I don't know how long I can distract her, Dresden. Quit gawking and do something. I'll put on afternoon theater for you later if you want to watch that bad." Then his mouth covered the girl's and she stiffened, eyes flying open wide before they languidly closed, deepening the kiss. I flushed at Thomas's words, which made my head pound painfully. I rooted around the floor and recovered the candles, still lit, and the bag of salt. I spread the salt in a circle around Lydia and Thomas as Lydia drew the lycra shorts down and reached back to grasp at Thomas to urge him toward her. Thomas let out a groan of pure anguish and said, "Dresden, hurry!" I settled the candles into place and gathered up whatever power I had left to close the circle and began the vortex again. If I was right, I would free Lydia, maybe permanently. If I was wrong, this was the last of my energy, and I'd dump it into the earth for nothing. The nightmare would presumably kill us, and I didn't think any of us were in the shape to do anything about it. Energy gathered into the circle, rising in a slow whirl of invisible, tingling power, and I stretched out my hand and willed more energy into it, feeling dizzy. The nightmare finally seemed to take notice of what was around it again. Lydia shivered and leaned a little away from Thomas, breaking some of the contact between them. Then the blood-red eyes snapped open and focused on me. Lydia began to rise, but Thomas clutched onto her, holding her. The power rose again, a second vortex whirling around the pair of them, tugging at spiritual energies within. Lydia screamed. "Leonid Krabos!" I thundered. I repeated the name and saw Lydia's eyes fly wide open in shock. "Begone, Krabos! You second-rate fire caller! Begone! Begone!" And with the last word, I stamped my foot down, releasing the power of the exorcism down into the earth. Lydia screamed, her body arching, her mouth dropping wide open. Within the whirling vortex, glittering motes of silver and gold light gathered into a funnel, centered on Lydia's gaping mouth. Scarlet energy flooded out of her screaming mouth, and for a moment there was an unnerving overlap of screams. One high-pitched, young, feminine, terrified, while the other was inhuman, otherworldly. More scarlet light lashed forth from Lydia's eyes, stolen away by the vortex's power. And then, with a rush and an implosion of suddenly empty air, the vortex swirled into an infinitely thin line and vanished, dropping down into the floor, lower, deep into the earth. Lydia let out a low, exhausted cry and dropped limply to the floor. Thomas, still clutching her, tumbled down with her. Silence fell on the room, but for the four of us, gasping for breath. Finally, I managed to sit up.
Michael,
I called, my voice hoarse.
Michael, are you okay?
Did you stop it? He asked. Is the girl all right?
I think so.
Thank God, he said. It kicked me, got one of my ribs.
I'm not sure I can sit up.
Don't, I said, and mopped sweat from my brow. Broken ribs could be bad. Thomas, are you... Hey, what the hell do you think you're doing? Thomas lay with his arms around Lydia, his pale, naked body pressed against hers, his lips nuzzling her ear. Lydia's eyes were open, colored naturally again, but not focused on anything. She didn't look conscious, but she was making tiny, aroused motions of her body, her hips leaning back to him. Thomas blinked up at me when I spoke, eyes still empty and white. What? He asked. She's not unwilling. She's probably just grateful to me for my help. Get away from her, I snapped. I'm hungry, he said. It won't kill her, Dresden. Not the first time. You'd be dead right now without me. Just let me... No, I said. But no. Get off of her, or you and I are going to have words. A snarl split the air between us. Thomas's full lips peeled back from his teeth. They looked like human teeth, not vampire fangs. Whiter and more perfect than human teeth, but other than that, normal. I returned his stare, coolly. Thomas looked away first. He closed his eyes for a moment, and when he opened them again, there were pale rings of color in them once more, slowly darkening. He released Lydia and rolled away from her. His ribs still looked dented, but not as much as before. He got to his feet and wrapped a towel around his hips again, then stalked back toward the bathroom without another word. I checked Lydia's pulse, blushed, and tugged her shorts back into place. Then I righted the couch and put her back onto it beneath the blankets. After that, I went to Michael. What was all that about? He asked. I told him what had happened, in terms as PG-rated as possible. He scowled, flickering a glance back toward the bathroom. They're like that, the White Court. Seducers. They feed on lust, fear, hatred, emotions. But they always use lust to seduce their victims. They can force them to feel it, indulge in sex. It's how they feed. Sex vampires, I know, I muttered. Still, it's interesting. Interesting, Michael sounded skeptical. Harry, I wouldn't call it interesting. Why not, I said. I squinted after Thomas thoughtfully. Whatever he used, it worked on the nightmare. Caught it up. That means that it's either some kind of ambient magic, maybe that cold I felt, that works on everything around, or else it's something chemical, like red quart venom, something that got to Lydia's body and bypassed the nightmare's control of her mind altogether. Pheromones, maybe. Harry, Michael said. I really don't mean to discourage your scholarly pursuits, but would you mind, very much, helping me with these broken ribs? We took inventory. I had some nasty bruises on my throat, but nothing more. Michael had one rib that was definitely broken, and one more that might have been cracked, tender as it was. I got him wrapped up pretty well. Thomas came out of my room, dressed in some of my spare jogging clothes. They hung off of him, and he had to roll the sleeves and legs of the sweatpants up. He slouched into a chair, his gaze settling on Lydia's sleeping form with a rather disconcerting intensity. It all fits now, I told him. I know what's going on, so I can finally do something about it. I'm going to the townhouse and get everyone out. Michael frowned at me. What fits? It wasn't the demon that crossed over, Michael. We were never fighting a demon. It was Kravos himself. Kravos is the nightmare. Michael blinked at me. But we didn't kill Kravos. He's still alive. Dollars to donuts he isn't. I figured that night before the nightmare's attack started, he puts together a ritual and takes himself out. Why would he do that? To come back as a ghost. To get revenge. Think about it. That's all the nightmare has been doing. It's been rampaging around, avenging Kravos. Could he do that? Michael asked. I shrugged. I don't see why he couldn't. If he had raised a bunch of power, and if he was focused on getting his vengeance and turning himself into a ghost, especially... With the border to the Never-Never as turbulent as it was, Michael finished.
Exactly. Which means that Mavra and Bianca helped him out, specifically. Hell, they probably put together the ritual that he used. And if someone in federal custody here in Chicago suddenly turned up suicidal in his cell, it would cause a big stir in the local police, and would be serious news for the media, which is why Murphy was being so hush-hush, and Susan was so distracted. She was working on a story, finding out what happened, following up a rumor, maybe. Thomas frowned.
Let me get this straight. This nightmare is the ghost of a sorcerer, Kravos, the cult murderer in the news several months ago.
Yeah, the turbulence in the Never-Never let him get made into a badass ghost.
Turbulence, Thomas said.
I nodded. Someone began binding the local spooks with torment spells. They went wild and began stirring the border between the real world and the Never-Never. I figured it was Mavra working with Bianca. That same turbulence let Kravos hit everyone he could in their dreams. It's how he got to me, and how he got to poor Malone, and how he got to Lydia just now. Lydia knew what he was doing. That's why she never wanted to go to sleep. I didn't see it coming when he hit me in my dreams. I wasn't ready for a fight, and he kicked my ass.
But now you can defeat him? Michael asked.
I'm ready for him now. I beat this punk while he was alive. Now I know what I'm dealing with. I can do it to a shade, too. I'll go to the house, take out the nightmare, Bianca if I have to, and get everyone out.
Did you get hit on the head when I wasn't looking? Thomas asked.
Dresden, I told you about the guards, the machine guns. I did mention the machine guns, didn't I?
I waved a hand. I'm already past the point where a sane man would be afraid. Guards and machine guns, whatever.
Look, Bianca has Susan, plus Justine, and maybe 20 or 30 kids being held captive, or getting set to get turned into fresh vampires. The police's hands are tied on this. Someone has to do something, and I'm the only one in a position to...
Get riddled with bullets, Thomas interjected, his tone dry.
My, how very helpful that will be toward attaining our mutual goals.
Oh, ye of little faith, Michael said, from his place in my easy chair. He swung his head back toward me. Go ahead, Harry. What do you have in mind?
I nodded. All right. I figure Bianca will have security all over the outside of the house. She'll cover all the approaches to it. Any cars that go in are going to get searched and so on.
Exactly, Thomas said. Dresden, I thought maybe we could pool our resources, work something out with our contacts and spies, perhaps disguise ourselves as caterers and sneak in.
He paused.
Well, you could pass for a caterer in any case.
But if we simply assault her house, we'll all be killed.
If we walk up where they can see us.
Thomas frowned. You have something else in mind? I doubt we could veil ourselves with magic. In familiar surroundings, she's going to be difficult to fool with those kinds of glamour. I lifted an eyebrow at the vampire. You're right. I had something else in mind. I came through the rift between the mortal world and the Never-Never last. I bore my staff and my rod and wore my leather duster, my shield bracelet and a copper ring upon my left hand, matched by another one upon my right. The Never-Never near my apartment looked like my apartment, only a bit cleaner and brighter. Deep philosophical statement about the spirituality of my little basement. Maybe. Shapes moved in the shadows, scurrying like rats or gliding over the floor like snakes. Spirit beings that fed on the crumbs of energy that spilled over from my place to the real world. Michael bore Amaracus in his hand, its blade glowing with a pearly luminescence. As soon as he had picked up the blade, his face had regained color, and he had moved as though his bandaged ribs no longer pained him. He wore denim and flannel and his steel-toed work boots. Thomas, dressed in my cast-offs and carrying an aluminum baseball bat from my closet, looked about the place, amused, his dark hair still damp and curling wetly over his shoulders. In a sack made of fishnet, Bob's skull hung from my fist, the orange skull lights glowing dimly like candles.
Harry, Bob asked, are you sure about this? I mean, I don't really want to get caught in the Never-Never if I can avoid it. A few old misunderstandings, you see.
You aren't any more worried about it than I am.
If my godmother catches me here, I've had it. Take it easy, Bob, I said. Just guide us through the shortest path to Bianca's place. Then I tear a hole back over to our side, into her basement, and we get everyone, get them out, and bring them home. There is no shortest path, Harry, Bob said. This is the spirit world. Things are linked together by concepts and ideas and don't necessarily adhere to physical distance. Like, I know the basics, Bob, I told him. But the bottom line is that you know your way around here a lot better than I do. Get us there. Bob sighed.
All right, but I can't guarantee we'll be in and out before sundown.
We might not even be able to make a hole through while the sun's still up. It tends to diffuse magical energies that... Bob, save the lecture for later. Leave the wizarding to me. The skull swung around to Michael and Thomas.
Excuse me, have either of you told Harry what a brainless plan this is?
Thomas raised his hand.
I did. It didn't do much good.
Bob rolled his eyelids.
It never does.
So help me, Dresden. If you die, I'm going to be very annoyed. You'll probably roll me under a rock at the last minute, and I'll be stuck there for 10,000 years until someone finds me. Don't tempt me. Less talk, more guide.
See, Mem Sahib, Bob said, seriously.
Thomas snickered. Bob turned his eyelids toward the stairs leading out of the never-never version of my apartment.
That way, he said.
We passed out of the apartment and into a sort of vague representation of Chicago, which looked like a stage set, flat building faces with no real substance to them, vague light that could have come from the sun or moon or streetlights, plus a hazy or gray-brown fog. From there, Bob guided us down a sidewalk, then turned into an alley and opened a garage door, which led to a stone-carved staircase winding down into the earth. We followed his lead into the darkness. At times, the only light we had was the orange glow of the skull's eyelights. Bob turned his head in the direction required, and we passed through a subterranean region that was mostly blackness and low ceilings, eventually rising up a slope that emerged in the center of a ring of standing dolmens atop a long hill. Stars shone overhead in a fierce blaze, and lights danced in the woods at the base of the hill, skittering around like manic fireflies. I stiffened in my boots.
Bob, I said.
Bob, you blew it, man. This is fairy.
Of course it is, Bob said. It's the biggest place in the Never Never. You can't go anywhere without crossing through fairy at one place or another.
Well, hurry up and cross us out, I said. We can't stay here.
Believe me, I don't want to hang here either. Either we get the Disney version of fairy, with elves and Tinkerbell pixies and who knows what sugary cuteness, or we get the Wicked Witch version, which is considerably more entertaining, but less healthy.
Even the summer court isn't all sweetness and light. Bob, shut up. Which way?
The skull turned mutely toward what seemed to be the westernmost side of the hill, and we descended down it.
It's like a park, Thomas commented. I mean, the grass should be over our knees.
Or no, maybe like a good golf course.
Harry, Michael said quietly, I'm getting a bad feeling. The skin on my neck started to crawl, and I looked back to Michael, nodding.
Bob, which way out?
Bob nodded ahead as we rounded a stand of trees.
An old colonial-covered bridge arched over a ridiculously steep chasm.
There, Bob said. That's the border. Where you're wanting isn't too far past that.
In the distance came the notes of a hunting horn, dark and clear, and the baying of hounds.
Run for the bridge, I snapped.
Thomas sprinted beside me without apparent effort. I glanced at Michael, who had reversed his grip on the sword and held it, pommel first, the blade laying against his forearm as he ran. His face was twisted up in effort and pain, but he kept pace.
Harry, Bob commented, if it's all the same, you might want to run a bit faster. There's a hunt coming.
The horn belled again, backed up by the dolmens, and the cries of the pack ran up sharp and clear. Thomas whirled to look, running a few paces backward before turning again.
I could have sworn they were miles away a moment ago. It's the Never Never, I panted. Distance, time, it's all fucked up in here.
Wow, Bob commented.
I hadn't realized they grew hellhounds that big. And look, Harry, it's your godmother. Hi, Leah.
If Bob had a body, he would have been jumping up and down and waving his fingers at her.
Don't be so enthusiastic, Bob. If she catches me, I get to join the pack.
Bob's eyelids swung toward me and he gulped.
Oh, he said. There's been a falling out, then. Or a falling further out, at any rate, since you weren't on such great terms to begin with.
Something like that, I panted.
Run, Bob said. Run faster. You really need to run faster, Harry.
My feet flew over the grass.
Thomas reached the bridge first, his feet thumping onto it. Michael got there a pace later. With a broken rib and 20 years on me, he still outran me to that damn bridge. I gotta work out more. "Made it!" I shouted, taking a last long step toward the bridge. The lariat hit me about the throat before my feet had quite touched down and jerked me back through the air with a snap. I lay on the ground, stunned, choking for the second time in 2 hours.
"Uh-oh," Bob said. "Harry, whatever you do, don't drop me, especially under a rock."
"Thanks a lot,"
I gasped, reaching up to jerk the rope from its constricting hole on my throat. Heavy hooves sank into the turf on either side of my head. I gulped and looked up at a night-black steed with black and silver tack. Its hooves were shod with bladed shoes of some silvery metal. It wasn't iron or steel. There was blood on those shoes, as though the horse had trampled some poor, trapped thing to death, or else sliced it apart. My gaze slid up past the horse to its rider. Leah rode the beast side saddle, perfectly relaxed and confident, wearing a dress of sable and midnight blue, her hair caught back in a loose braid of flame. Her eyes gleamed in the starlight, the other side of the lariat held in one lovely hand. The hellhounds crowded around her steed, all of them focused on yours truly. Call it a wild impression of the moment, but they looked hungry.
"Feeling better, are we?"
Leah asked with a slow smile.
"That's wonderful. We can finally conclude our bargain."
Chapter 33. It only takes a couple of these rough little episodes of life to teach a man a certain amount of cynicism. Once a rogue wizard or three has tried to end your life, or some berserk hexen wolves have worked really hard to have your throat torn out, you start to expect the worst. In fact, if the worst doesn't happen, you find yourself somewhat disappointed. So, really, it was just as well that Godmother had caught up to me, in spite of my best efforts to avoid her. I'd hate to find out that the universe really wasn't conspiring against me. It would jerk the rug out from under my persecution complex. Therefore, working on the assumption that some sadistic higher power would make sure my evening got as complicated as it possibly could, I had formed a plan. I jerked the lariat from about my throat and croaked,
"Thomas! Michael! Now!"
The pair of them produced small cardboard boxes from their pockets, palm-sized and almost square. With a shake, Michael cast the contents of the first box forward, slewing the box left and right like a man scattering seeds. Thomas followed his lead on the other side of my body, so that objects began to rain down atop and nearby me. The fairy hounds let out startled yelps and leapt away. My godmother's horse let out a scream and pranced back several steps, putting distance between us. I scrunched up my face and did my best to shield my eyes from the scattering nails. They fell over me in a sharp-toothed shower, prickling as they struck and settled around me. Godmother had to let out on the rope that had looped around my throat as her horse backed away, giving me a bit of slack.
"Iron!"
hissed my godmother. Her lovely face turned livid, furious.
"You dare defile Ansh soil with iron? The queen will rip your eyes from your skull."
"No," Thomas said. "They're aluminum. No iron content. That's a lovely horse you have. What's its name?"
Leah's eyes flashed to Thomas, and then the nails all over the ground. While she did, I dipped a hand into my pocket, palmed my contingency plan, and popped it into my mouth. Two or three chews and a swallow, and I was finished. I tried not to let the abrupt surge of terror show.
"Not steel,"
Leah said. She beckoned sharply at the ground, and one of the nails leapt up to her hand. She gripped it, frowning, her expression abruptly wary.
"What is the meaning of this?" "It's meant to be a distraction, Godmother," I said.
I coughed and patted my chest.
"I just had to eat something."
Leah laid a hand on her horse's neck, and the savage beast calmed. One of the shadowy hounds nosed forward, nudging one of the nails with its snout. Leah gave the rope a little jerk, taking up the slack again, and said,
"It will do you no good, wizard. You cannot escape this rope. It's bound to hold you. You cannot escape my power. Not here. Not in fairy. I am too strong for you."
"All true," I agreed.